Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting college football bowl games, good luck. No, seriously, it's never been harder. And you don't want to be hurting your bankroll. You want to make sure you're doing your homework. Listen to Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I will be breaking down every single bowl game, dropping new episodes nearly every day throughout college football's postseason. Spicing things up with a 12-team playoff. Can't wait to see some of those teams from the South come up north for the snow. Be sure to subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good Friday afternoon. Welcome into Grant and Danny. You are listening live to The Fan. Danny is out today. Toby Altizer is in alongside. And we are taking you all the way up to 6:30 this evening. Of course, you can listen to the show all over the place on the Odyssey app. You can watch us live in high definition on the 106.7 The Fan YouTube page. We'll get you ready for another weekend of NFL football. And more importantly, the Commanders and the Falcons on Sunday, Washington trying to clinch a playoff spot. Tobes, how was the holiday?
Oh, it was good. It's been a minute, GP. It's good to have your voice back on the airwaves. And yeah, it was a good holiday. It was good. Really just spent time by myself, had a nice steak on Christmas Day, and enjoyed some days off just chilling at home.
Love it. Yeah, Christmas with the kids is, it's back to the like the magic of your childhood. So it was a lot of fun. We were at the in-laws' house pretty much all night on Christmas night into yesterday, and then back home, and they immediately started playing with all their toys. The big hit, which I did not see coming, by the way, the thing that they liked the most so far, it seemed like, at least in terms of minutes spent playing with a toy, is a little mini air hockey table.
Oh,
that has been like on our kitchen table. There's been great consternation. It has led to many a fight. It keeps score electronically, so there's no like finagling the scoreboard.
Sure.
And at 10, it just kind of shuts off. The air stops blowing. But I think there have been hours spent already on that mini air hockey table, which Santa must have known. I mean, when they go to Chuck E. Cheese, they spend some time on the air hockey paddles. But yeah, it's been a smashola at the Paulson household.
That sounds like fun. I love some air hockey. I loved playing it growing up. So good for your kids. I love it.
Air hockey, pool, ping pong, skee ball, all of those games where you can get like the B-list versions of it in your basement or whatever. Where are you best? What's your game?
My game, so when I worked at, there was a camp in Wisconsin that had this old school foosball table.
Oh, foosball, off the board,
that
okay.
Was my go-to. Like, foosball.
Did you do spinners?
No spinners, but there were, it has to be like old school because there were little things in the corner so the ball couldn't get stuck in the corner, you know, like it was always continuous play. I love some foosball. If we're going stuff like you were saying, I think probably air hockey.
Yeah.
But foosball was my go-to of those sorts of games.
Super fun. The issue for me on foosball is I grew up doing spinners.
Okay.
And so now not doing it, it's A, not as fun because I'm not as good at it. And B, it's just hard to break the habit. So if someone thinks you're cheating them or they're angry the whole time.
So if you want to be a spinner, that's fine. I just play my way.
Right, but I mean, it's a distinct disadvantage. A
little bit.
If somebody's spinning and somebody's not. But air hockey's definitely the play. But it's been a great few days. It's been great to be with the family, and happy to be back on the air with you. Danny will be back next week, about midway through the week, as we steamroll toward the new year. A lot going on in DC sports to get to, though. We should mention, you just heard in the update from Byron, Alex Ovechkin is coming back tomorrow, it sounds
Love
like.
Love it. Love it.
4 to 6 weeks for Ovi. It was not going to be six. You knew that, right? He actually was pushing the envelope It sounds like he wanted to go, or at least might have been ready to go before Christmas. But they held him and said, you know what? Let's protect you from yourself a little bit. Let's give you an extra several days, get you to the holiday. We'll come back. You're going to be in Toronto, where he always plays great, against a marquee matchup in the conference against the Leafs. Get him back on the ice for that game, and then get you going for your stretch run. So I think they handled it really well. Ovi obviously busted his butt in the rehab, but you knew he was going to come back pretty quickly when you saw him, like, I don't know if it was 3 or 4 days after the injury, he was already at a Wizards game walking around in a boot.
Yeah.
And then another 5 or 6 days after that, he was, like, skating very gracefully, but also not putting a lot of weight on his boots on the ice. You knew he was not going to be a lengthy recovery.
I mean, he went out and skated trying to see if he could come back in that game, right? Like, he didn't look good, but he was trying to get back in that game. So credit to the Caps for being smart. I mean, if this were playoff time, he probably comes back a couple of weeks ago, like you were saying. Maybe he gets back out there before Christmas, but there's no need to rush. The Caps, surprisingly, kind of found a little bit of a rhythm. They're playing decently well. They lost a couple of games, but I mean, the fact that they've been playing well, you've seen guys step up. I was watching the Altcast the other night. You called a pro goal, and Protas was the first one to find the net. So, you know, those sorts of guys stepping up and fill in the hole while he was gone, you hope that they can continue that role as they kind of go back to their normal lines and guys fill their normal spots when Ovi comes back. If that's the case, I mean, the Caps are already one of the best teams in the league. Add Ovi back in. Like, if he can come back in any sort of form like he was before he got hurt, look out.
Yeah, other than the Winnipeg Jets, essentially, they're probably the best team in hockey right now. And they've done it now for several weeks without Ovechkin. So to slot him back in and to get all of their lines lined up the way they want to, I mean, this is a legitimate playoff club, and this is a team that would have a chance, assuming they can stay healthy, get into the playoffs playing the kind of hockey they have these last few weeks. I mean, they're a real contender for the first time since they were cup winners back in 2018, which is exciting. To have a team in the playoffs. The Commanders will be there as well, it looks like. We'll get to them in 1 minute. But transitioning over to the NFL, I've not been on the air since Christmas Day, so I just wanted to say, I actually thought the Netflix presentation of football was really good. And I don't know what the response has been. You've been in on a couple different shows. You could tell me how people felt about it. But I've been kind of in my own little bubble, basically, doing my own thing at home with the fam. But 65 million viewers tuned in on Christmas Day to two Netflix games. Nothing live has been streamed quite to this magnitude yet. And I thought it was seamless. We had multiple screens going, one in the kitchen where we're cooking, another around the big screen where everyone's sitting around watching. Now, I will say one of the screens ended up being a little bit behind the other. I'm not really sure why, specific to our viewing experience. But it was two areas of the house, so it didn't really matter. I just thought overall, it went about as well as it could. I know there were so many complaints for that big fight between the YouTuber and Mike Tyson.
And valid complaints, because it literally just stopped or wouldn't play. That was never the case, at least from my end.
Actually, a good thing, because no one should have been watching that, obviously. So it not playing was actually what all of those people deserve. The only thing that would have been better is if it would have just, like, somehow in the arena, frozen everybody there forever.
Well, and I think at one point, Antonio Brown on his Twitter was getting more viewers of that fight than on Netflix.
That makes perfect sense, too. The fact that he's somehow involved, again, put everybody in a spaceship. Wherever they end up, I hope it's a great place. That having been said, though, I think we did really well.
Yeah.
Everyone was complaining and worried and saying, oh, it's going to be buffering. I don't know what each person's experience was like, but I didn't have 1 second of an issue watching NFL games. I thought the score bug looked awesome. I thought the Eagle Party with Ian and Noah, the broadcast teams, they spent crazy amounts of money on their pre- and post-game shows. I never even saw the comedians or what their role was, so I must not have been watching
at
the right
moment.
Very
brief. I mean, you'd be shocked that Bert Kreischer took his shirt off.
Oh, weird.
So he was kind of hanging out with some fans pre-game, and I think Nate Bargatze had something come out on Christmas Eve, so they had him on, and he talked briefly about it. But I actually thought they did a good job. You know, we were talking about joking 22 different media personalities, on-air personalities. I thought they did a good job balancing it. I think they, you know, they had a nice desk pregame where they were talking with the McCourties and Laura Rutledge. I thought Kay Adams did a good job with RG3 and Mina Kimes and that crew.
Did they have different panels pre and post for each game, or was it the same crew doing it the whole day.
I think it was pretty much the pregame was Laura Rutledge and the McCourties and maybe someone else on there. And then
for both games?
No, they were okay. They were on site in Pittsburgh.
Gotcha.
So they kind of, once that game was over, they were done. And then it was Kay Adams and RG3 and Drew Brees.
Manti Te'o. That's what I saw.
So I thought they did a good job, though, of mixing it in where each person got their say. They had their clear role. Because for that many people on only two games, it didn't seem like each person was going to get their say, but they did. So I thought they did a good job. The only issue I have with Netflix, and I think, you know, in the modern world of sports betting, it's hard with streaming when you're behind. Right, like if I want to live bet the Chiefs and I'm looking at, you know, ESPN trying to figure out, I'm two plays, three plays behind.
That's a great point.
On the stream. So that's the only issue. If they could fix something like that, and I think coming down the line, you know, this is a real trial run of potentially being a part of the next NFL's package. So, you know, if they can fix that, though, I thought everything else was great.
So I did not live bet that game, which is rare for me, but I did not have that issue. But you're totally right. I had a couple of bets pregame that I would check, you know, every now and then. As if they're going to change, by the way.
Right.
I don't know why I stare at my bets. I'm like, let's see. Well, I'm still looking good or still looking terrible. I will say the parlays, I like to keep track of as they go.
Did you have better luck on Christmas with your parlays?
I did, actually.
Okay, good.
Yeah, we did okay on Christmas.
Is it because the Lions did not play and you didn't have one of their running backs screw you?
The Lions running backs love to screw me. Toby's gotten an angry text or two about that. But I thought that was awesome. And as good as those that presentation was, it wasn't like the games were great. Thursday Night Football, man, last night.
Ugh.
We should have all gotten a prize for watching that game. That should be a new rule. When there's not a touchdown scored and the offense is that ugly, I didn't think it was good defense.
No.
I mean, it was fine defense statistically. They played at a high level. But to me, when you have a 6-3 game like that, it tells you like, oh, man, these defenses were dominating. You think of like old school AFC North, Steelers, Ravens type stuff. I didn't think that's what this was. To me, this was really, really gross offense, and it was just a grind of a watch for the Seahawks to get a win. They didn't really deserve that much last night against a worse Bears team. And we always say on this show, Danny and I, some games somebody wins, but there are also games where like somebody lost or just got to be the team that finished first. That's what yesterday felt like to me. That was bad.
I mean, when you score 6 points and win, you don't deserve to win, just frankly. I mean, like, it was ugly in the entire game. Neither offense had anything going. The one exciting play gets called back, right? Caleb Williams rolling out to his left with a seed of a throw into the end zone that would have been the only touchdown of the game gets called back for a hold. Thomas Brown feels like he's in over his head. He's calling timeouts when he shouldn't. He can't make his mind up on fourth down at the end of the game. Like, there were so many bad things.
I don't know that he was a legitimate candidate to be their head coach. I thought yesterday was pretty disqualifying.
100%.
For him at this point, certainly in that job, which isn't to say that he won't get another one, but with Caleb Williams as a 1-1 pick at quarterback, that is going to be a hotly competitive gig. I mean, people are going to want that. The performance they had on primetime national television yesterday, and from his standpoint as a coach, I think is a disqualifier.
Well, and I feel bad for him because this is a guy that was really sought after, you remember, a couple coaching cycles ago, not maybe as a head coach, but as someone that could get that bump up to be an offensive coordinator and play caller. He gets that opportunity in Carolina. We saw how that went last year. Now he gets an opportunity in Chicago. That's not going well either. You know, this is a guy that's endorsed by McVay. And generally, when McVay endorses you around the league, that's gold. It hasn't really worked out for him.
So I think he's gotten two terrible opportunities. 100%. But it is what it is. I mean, if those are your chances and you say yes, and why wouldn't you? In this case, to be an interim head coach is a no-brainer. And they go this way, it will change how people view you. It's just natural. And that is totally what's happening. To your point, I mean, McVay loves him. I've said this on the show before, but there are two people Sean McVay's ever reached out to me about as if to say, like, you're going to love this guy. He should be a coach. Washington should interview him kind of thing. One is Thomas Brown. The other is Raheem Morris before he got the Falcons' job when the Commanders were interviewing him. But there are a lot of people around the league, not just McVay, who think highly of him. But I think two things can be true. Caleb Williams right now is not playing well enough and is broken and is holding on to the ball and seeing ghosts. And also, and it's weird to say this because I said before the year I thought he had the best situation for any rookie quarterback ever in terms of insulation, talent around him, weaponry, receivers. I did not properly account for the coaching part of the scenario. I think he has a terrible situation and has since the moment they took over this year. Shane Waldron, hung him out to dry, did a bad job. I still think, even right now, like, here's how I know that the plan yesterday for Caleb Williams was horrendous from Brown and company. He was 1 for 9 with an interception on throws beyond 7 yards yesterday. 1 for 9. The fact that there are only 9 throws out of almost 30 beyond 7 yards is in and of itself a tell that that offense is broken. Some of that is on the quarterback, not all of it. And then 1 for 9, unless you're just missing wide open receivers, is unacceptable. Like, we watch Jaden Daniels, who's electric and unbelievable and talented here, and he's a great player, but he's mostly throwing to guys that are open beyond 7 yards. That doesn't happen with the Bears nearly enough.
Well, and the tough part is, this is a guy that coming out, a lot of what you're describing is issues that he had coming out as a prospect. You needed to fix a lot of this stuff. Inaccuracy, some of that stuff. He needs to play in structure. The problem is, you can say, well, he's still living off of street ball, which he does, but have they done anything to help him play in structure? Is the structure of the offense good at all? That, you know, it's something, you're right. Like, the weapons that he had around him, I don't know that a rookie quarterback has had coming into the league probably ever. I think the two things that we discounted were the O-line is still terrible, and the coaching doesn't help them at all. And we should have learned from last year watching an offensive coordinator not do his quarterback any benefits, that it's still incredibly important that you have a play caller and an offensive coordinator that's going to draw up stuff that plays to that guy's strengths. And Waldron didn't do a good job doing that. Whoever is calling the plays now, Thomas Brown or whoever, is not doing a good job of drawing that stuff up, because, you know, where's the simple slant? Where's a simple curl? Where's a simple hitch? Where are any of these things that you see Jaden complete, you know, 4 and 5 of in the first quarter so Cliff can get him going, and then he starts hitting the downfield shots and making plays in the intermediate stuff? I mean, there's stuff like getting on the same page. You're in week 17, and I get they're both rookies, but there's one last night where it's like a 20-yard in, and you've got Rome Odunze who's open. Odunze sits. Caleb Williams wants it to go. I think he still overshoots him, but you're 17 weeks in. You're not on the same page yet?
With a guy that you've been best buddies with since draft night. You know, you've been throwing with all offseason,
exactly,
going up to week 1, who had one catch last night. Since the Hail Mary loss in Washington, when the Bears with seconds left are already celebrating the win. Remember, you got a DB trolling the crowd in Landover. They are 0-10, and they've been outscored by 109 points. Just a complete collapse. Coaches have been fired. The season's gone off the rails. Caleb Williams has been sacked 47 times in those 10 games. A 80-sack pace over 17 games. I wonder if there was a redraft right now, where he would go.
Yeah.
Because I think he has shown enough spectacular moments and plays where I think the average person that actually studies the league would look at him and go, if you get the right quarterback coordinator relationship, he's going to be just fine. If you hire the right coach and the right play caller for him, this is going to work out really well. And they'll view him not only as someone who struggled some, but as a victim a little bit this year. But I still think you would, based on Jaden Daniels having such an incredible season, I think you would see most people take him over him. I think Drake May would go over him, according to most evaluators. May, quietly, because the Patriots are horrendous, has been remarkable. He's the youngest starting quarterback in the NFL, and he's been top 8 in the league in accuracy and top 3 in play creation at this point on the season. I mean, he's doing a lot
he's
of good
special.
Things. He looks like playing in a terrible offense with bad players around him. He could be a really unique talent. So I think he might go third, actually, in a redraft.
I might still take him second because I was super high on him. Jaden would be number one for me, and then I might go Caleb Williams. It's close between him and May. But I'm curious how people around the league are going to view him, because there's two guys that I can think of off the top of my head that were early first-round picks, and they couldn't have different views around the league. Zach Wilson was a number two pick, and everyone's out on him. Sam Darnold was a top five pick. What was he, third?
I think he was second.
Second. Yeah. He was picked early, and he sucked nonstop, and everyone said, I think if you got him the right play caller, that he could figure it out. They kept saying it, right? Even when he was horrible, no one's saying that about Zach Wilson. How do people view Caleb Williams? You know, it's only been a rookie year, so we're not giving up on him. But if things continue to go in this sort of manner, are people going to view him on the Zach Wilson, like, it was nice, it was fun, we're done? Or is it going to be the Sam Darnold, put him in the right spot, and he could still excel?
See, I don't think anyone should. Maybe, look, people are going to jump on you when they can. Because now everything's this fan base infighting.
Yeah.
So like Commanders fans or Broncos fans or Patriots fans are going to pounce on Caleb Williams. Just like they will, you know, when Jaden Daniels had his bad primetime game against the Eagles. The Bears fans will come out of the woodwork. That's silly. You know, that happens. But I don't think any reasonable person who watches a lot of ball is going to look at Caleb Williams this year and think he's a bust or can't
Correct.
Play. Like, there's too many deposits. My normal way of viewing young quarterbacks, and Daniels has broken that a little bit this year because there haven't been a lot of, you know, the negatives. But generally, I want a couple of positives with all the negatives. That's what we used to want out of a rookie. I think Caleb Williams is a good example of that, frankly, where you just go, yeah, I know you threw a couple of bad picks. And by the way, he went 2 months without throwing an interception. But I know you hold on to the ball too long, you take these sacks, and that's always been my issue with him, and it's what I don't like about his game very much. But look at this play. Look at the thing you created here. Look at this throw you made from one hash to the other numbers that very few guys can make. That's arm talent. And I think most people that watch him see enough of that, for sure. Something we can get into a little bit later. I want to get to the Commanders and the Falcons next, though, because we got some notes coming out of Ashburn today, including what looks like it's going to be a game that Marshawn Lattimore does not play in. How much does that change this weekend against Atlanta? And how confident are we that the Commanders get the win they need to clinch if they don't get some help from Tampa Bay earlier on the Sunday slate? They will have to win to get in against the Falcons in primetime. How sure are we that they beat Atlanta? That's next on Grant and Danny. Toby's in today. You're listening to The Fan. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan. Danny is out today. Toby Altizer is in. Darris and Ryan alongside on the production. We're taking you up to 6:30 this evening on this Friday. And then next week, Danny will be back, I think, midweek. We'll be back at full strength for a couple days heading into the new year. Question about Sunday's game is, how confident are you that the Commanders beat the Falcons on Sunday Night Football? This is an Atlanta team that beat the Giants handily, but that's the worst team in the NFL maybe right now after their quarterback change. Their offense looked different. They never moved Kirk Cousins out of the pocket. They must not have thought that he could bootleg. They bootlegged him on 2% of snaps this season. Michael Penix, in his first game with the team, bootlegged on 24% of snaps for Atlanta. So you defend now more of the field because you've got a quarterback who's not in the same place all the time. The mark that he's throwing from is going to move in both directions as a southpaw. Makes it a lot more complicated defensively. And then we got this news, Toby, today from Ashburn, where it does not sound like Marshawn Lattimore is going to be able to play. He did not practice today. He has not practiced at all this week. Ben Standig followed up with Dan Quinn and asked, is this the same injury that he suffered earlier in the year? And Quinn didn't expound upon his answer, but said yes. That hamstring injury earlier in the year kept him out several weeks. Now, it might not be to the same extent, might not be the same grade hamstring injury, so hopefully he can be back, whether that's next week or certainly into the playoffs. But he's dealing with the same hamstring, now barking. They're almost certainly getting in. So it would be stunning to me if he played after not practicing. The way Dan Quinn spoke today, it almost seemed like a formality that he's not going to be on the field.
Yeah, I mean, to me at this point with Lattimore, I'd almost look at it as if he gets back on the field this year as a luxury. And whether that's, you know, week 18 against Dallas or even a playoff game, when you're re-injuring something like that for a guy, at any point it could get worse, right? Like, it's one of those, it's why hamstring injuries with these speed guys are so, so tough, because you can give them all the rest and you almost have to give them an extra week or two and then it could still pop up. So it's disappointing to see that he's on the injury report again. At this point for me, you can't guarantee that a season's done, but anything you get from him the rest of the year to me is gravy, because when you re-injure that thing again, it feels like you're done.
If he doesn't go on Sunday, he will have played in two games since getting here and sat for six games with the hamstring over two different injuries, essentially, at that point, because he got back healthy and he's now hurt again. I've said all along I loved the trade, and I still do, because I think on the cheap, you got a cornerback one it costs less to go get Lattimore than it will cost in the free agent market.
Correct.
To go get a comparable player this offseason, and there are 2 years left on that deal. I'm not quite yet at I don't trust him going into next year. I think this is an issue of a lot of times with a hamstring like this, you need a lot of time. You talk to Santana Moss about this as an example. I have in the past about his early career hamstring stuff. And it might be a scenario where he needs a good bulk of the offseason to really get all the way back to 100%. And then I hope he can do some things differently with soft tissue injuries. And maybe like Santana, you need different trainers. You need to kind of go about your career differently moving forward. But they didn't necessarily trade for him for the rest of this season. But they also didn't trade for him in season just to have him
Correct.
For those 2 years. So I think both are true. It is a huge disappointment if he can't play in your biggest game of the year. When he wasn't playing early on, what did we say? He'll be back for the stretch run. All you need is to make sure as you're trying to lock down your playoff spot. And someone might say, it's fine. They're going to make the playoffs anyway. Yeah, but they still have a chance to get to the sixth seed with wins. They still have a chance to win the division and be a two seed and get a home playoff game if they win out and the Eagles lose out. So there's a lot on the line still where you need your best players, and he's one of them, on the grass.
Yeah, I don't think you can make a full evaluation on this trade until we see what happens next year and the following year with it. So to your point, you know, you can't say this is a loss, you can't say this is a mistake or anything until we see how he looks the next 2 years. Because if he's a shutdown guy and you get him on the cheap in a trade where you're also not paying him as much as you would in free agency if you were to go get somebody, then yeah, at that point, you can make the evaluation. But you also don't trade for a dude in the middle of the season for the following 2 years. You trade for them to help you out this season. And so it's disappointing this year that you saw the difference he can make. In the Saints game, they didn't even look his direction. In the Eagles game, say what you want about how it went with A.J. Brown, they didn't have to change their defense. They just left him on A.J. Brown. So if you go back and look, yes, A.J. Brown had his. There were only three dudes in that game that caught passes, Grant. Only three. That was him, Devontae Smith, and he only went for 57 yards or so, and then Kenny Gainwell caught one. So they were able to, large part, and I just know some of that hurts, but they were in large part able to hold that passing game in check because you just left him on A.J. Brown.
Well, to your point, yes, the results were not great. They have not had a corner that they can put on A.J. Brown, or anyone for that matter, and say, you just deal with him. Whether it goes good or bad, whether
Correct.
It goes well or it doesn't. And it didn't, for the most part, giving up as much as it did, plus the three PI penalties. Although I think a couple of those were ticky-tack, and I haven't really even been on since that game. But at least one, if not two of those, probably shouldn't have been called. But that's another point for another day. But regardless, they've not had a guy of his caliber to do that. So it just tells you they're in a different pantheon. And you're going to get got sometimes as a corner when you're running around with a Hall of Famer.
Correct.
And next time, maybe he gets a pick or breaks up three passes and he has his day because A.J. Brown's going against an elite corner as well. But to your point, I think not having him changes the eye line a little bit for the defense. We're going to get more into this in the 4 o'clock hour. Just, you know, how different they look if it's more Benjamin St. Just and Michael Davis. Because, by the way, when Dan Quinn was asked about this today, and how telling is this? Okay, so if Lattimore can't go, is BSJ the starter again? And he basically said, yeah, we've been working two guys in over there in practice.
Not great.
It's been St. Just and Michael Davis. Davis, who was paid almost nothing to come over as a DB to play on special teams and be like a fourth or fifth
corner
for
you.
And
by the way, played like almost nothing.
I mean, he was benched pretty quickly. So for St. Just not to just automatically be the next man up, whew.
Yeah.
It's been a long fall from grace for him this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough for Benjamin St. Just. I mean, I know that it's tough to come in off the bench, but I felt like last week on that fourth down, he had a real chance to redeem himself. If you just make a tackle there, he's unable to do it. So, you know, I'm sure he's going to be back out there. He's going to play a significant role, but man, does it really change what you looked at the defense with Lattimore, and then it's going back to what you had before where you just didn't feel like you trusted anybody outside.
So here's the question. We should open up the phones for the first time today on Grant and Danny on this. 800-636-1067 on the MGM National Harbor listener lines. What's your level of confidence, we can go 1 to 10 here, that the Commanders get the win they need Sunday night against the Falcons in what is one of the most anticipated home games in years? As far as primetime home games, you might be able to go back to 2012 at the end of the year when they punched their ticket to the playoffs with a division-clinching win against the Dallas Cowboys. People are going to be loud. There's going to be great energy. It's not a divisional game. There's some Falcons fans, I'm sure, in the area that'll be there, but it's not one of those, you know, teams that overtakes the stadium, so there's going to be tons of burgundy and gold. I know the weather's not great. It sounds like it's going to be really comfortable, maybe even 60 degrees or upper 50s at kickoff, which in late December into the New Year is amazing, except that it's going to be raining probably throughout the game.
Not fun.
But it's going to be a great atmosphere, I think, and people are going to be very loud. You got Atlanta starting a rookie quarterback who's going to be playing just the second time in his career as a starter in Michael Penix. Defensively, they have not been good for most of the year, but they're playing a lot better over the last few weeks. They actually turned the Giants over three times and had two pick sixes against New York. 1 to 10 level of confidence that Washington beats Atlanta, and why? That's the question at 800-636-1067.
I'll go with a 7 here because I'm not overly confident. I'm not going to go out there and guarantee a win, but I feel like they are going to win. I feel confident that they're going to go out there and play well. I'm not scared of Atlanta's defense. I think this offense is going to be able to do what it wants. They need to get the run game going, by the way. It's really struggled the last six games, and last week it was non-existent aside from Jaden. If they can get the run game going, that confidence level would probably go up a little bit, but I still feel confident they'll be able to just be efficient and put up 30-plus points. And the reason that I would say it's a 7 is because I don't know that Michael Penix can match that. You know, he's a rookie quarterback making his second start. If this were Kirk Cousins, maybe the confidence level is a little bit higher because of how they've been playing. There's some unknown with Penix. You watch him last week, and they didn't ask him to do a whole lot, but he can make every throw in the book. He doesn't have to really step into anything to throw. He's got a rocket arm, so anything they need him to do, he can do. And so is it something where in his second start, he just lights the world on fire and uses those weapons really well? Maybe. But I think if you can get pressure early and you can contain that running game, I think you really feel good about your shot. So it's not something where I feel overly confident because on paper, I would still say they have the better roster. But the way they've played this year, I think Washington's the better team. So if they go out there, handle their business, play well, I think they win this one. And so that I would say 7 out of 10.
So I'm going to go 6 out of 10. I'm not as confident as you, but I think they win. And my read on this is I think they match up well, and I feel good about them in every phase, but I don't feel great about anything.
Sure.
Yep. Like, offensively, when Washington has the ball, I think they will be able to throw the ball on the Falcons pretty effectively. To your point about the running game, I can't feel great about their offense until they start running the ball better. It's been pretty ugly here of late, and I'm not even talking about B-Rob putting the ball on the ground two times in the last game. I'm saying they haven't, against the Saints, one of the worst run defenses in the league, against the Cowboys, one of the worst run defenses in the league, they haven't been able to run the ball in those games. And then last week, as you said, it was Jaden Daniels or bust kind of running the football. The reason I feel really good, though, about them offensively is that when Washington's got the ball, Daniels will have time. He'll be able to extend and create, which is when they're at their best. The Falcons are terrible at generating pressure. They have been all year. They've gotten a little bit better at getting to the quarterback the last couple of weeks, but they've gone from, like, horrific to just regular, not that good. They get pressure 29% of the time, third lowest in the NFL. They've been bottom three in that category three of the last 4 years. They can't generate pressure. They've tried to do things like go out and trade for Matthew Judon, and then he doesn't really deliver. They had a chance, obviously, early this year to draft a pass rusher. They elected to take Penix, who's already now become their starting quarterback before the end of his rookie season. They are dead last in the NFL at sacking the quarterback in terms of how often they do it, about 4.5% of plays. Worst in the NFL. Somewhere they've been, as I said, two of the last 3 years before this one. So I just don't see them getting to Jaden Daniels. And where teams have had some success against Washington, Tobe, is when they rush the quarterback and they force Daniels into either leaving the pocket to run or making the quick decision. Remember the bad interception, the second pick of his game against the Eagles. Pass rush up the middle, rolls to his right, throws late across the middle. Kind of a rookie mistake. I just don't see the Falcons forcing him into many of those. So that's where I feel best. I also like the matchup from the standpoint that Jaden Daniels against zone, the teams that are kind of like, hey, if you take what we give you for 5, 7, 8, 9 yards at a time, he is eating those teams up. He's completed 75% of passes against zone coverage, third best in the NFL this year, and the Falcons are a zone team. They play zone about 78% of the time. So I could see this being a Cliff Kingsbury, Jaden Daniels clinic in short passing, quick game type stuff. Now, he's also thrown 7 picks against zone, and he only has 1 against man, which is indicative of maybe getting fooled or missing across the middle of the field or whatever. So maybe they turn him over once or something like that. I could see that. But I also think there's a couple of touchdowns. There's 250 yards. There's just more success through the air. So that's kind of the breakdown of Washington's offense. We can get into their defense in a minute, and we'll take some calls on this as well. 800-636-1067 is the number. What is your level of confidence and where does it come from? You're saying what? 7 out of 10 they win?
7 out of 10.
And your biggest reason for confidence is?
The offense, Jaden Daniels, going and then going against another rookie quarterback.
What do you guys think? Grant and Danny on the Fan. Falcons coming to town for Sunday Night Football. Depending on what happens in the 1 o'clock window, it could be a clinch to get in situation. A win to get in, I should say. A clinch game for Washington. Now, they might not need the game to get into the playoffs, but they're still seeding on the line. They're trying to climb to the 6th seed. They have an outside chance to get into the 2 seed. We'll go through all of the permutations for playoff seeding at the top of the hour in about 10 minutes. Welcome back. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Danny is out. Toby Altizer is in. We're taking your calls, though, on your level of confidence, 1 to 10, that Washington handles its business, beats the Falcons in prime time on Sunday Night Football. Toby went with 7. I went with 6. But then I gave a bunch of reasons why I'm extremely confident their offense plays pretty well. We did not get to the defense, though.
Ooh.
And I'm a little nervous about Washington's defense in this game without Marshon Lattimore. I don't think the Falcons are primed to have a monster game in Penix's second start, but it's just not as good a matchup, and I think Bijan Robinson's a problem. The Falcons are the single best zone-running outside zone team in the NFL. It's clinical when they line up and they run outside, which they do, by the way, 70% of the time, more than anybody else, and they don't get hit in the backfield almost ever. They have the third best rate in the NFL at getting to the line of scrimmage before contact. They're really good at blocking it up. Washington, I think, is going to struggle with the outside zone. I think Bijan Robinson's going to run for 100 yards in this game. And as I said, by benching Cousins, even though they did it before the Giants game, which was going to be one of their easiest games of the year, they would have won a second straight game with Cousins at quarterback because they beat the Raiders as well. But they strategically got Penix a soft landing spot, which was smart. Let him get going in a game where you had 2 pick sixes and your defense dominated Drew Lock. This will really be Penix's first test. And without Lattimore, I don't know how much of a test it is. If it's Drake London, say, on BSJ or Michael Davis, and Sanders still on Darnell Mooney, who's a little bit more of a vertical threat down the field, I think there's going to be a couple plays for the Falcons there. I think they run the ball. I think they score over 20 points in this game. And that's where my concern would be is, what if Bijan Robinson rips off a couple of those Barkley-like runs, where he goes for 41 or 51 or something? And next thing you know, we just saw a running back have a 110-yard quarter in Landover. I don't think Penix will be great, but I think he's better than Kenny Pickett, right? He's
absolutely
not going to miss throws. I just think they're going to finish better, maybe. That's where my nerves come from. I'm still a 6 out of 10, but I don't love this matchup defensively as much as I feel good about Washington's offense against Atlanta's defense.
I think if you bring the game plan that you installed once Pickett was in the game, where you are going to sell out to stop the run and you're going to bring some pressure and play a little more zone behind it, I think that might be the game plan and just see how it goes. Early on, I want someone to hit Penix, whether it's Luvu, whether someone needs to let him know, because he is more mobile than Kirk at this point, but Kirk can't move. Like, Penix isn't a super mobile quarterback. He's not going to get out and run. He's a pocket passer. So if you can get some pressure early and just speed some stuff up, it's his first real test, like you said. So, I think he can beat you. I think down the line he's going to be a good quarterback. I don't know that I trust that he can do that yet. If he goes out and does it, I'd be surprised.
But also, why not see him make a couple mistakes? Like,
sure,
I hope they mix some coverages and show him some things maybe they haven't done the last couple weeks on film. Because, I mean, we're talking about the infancy of his time on the field now.
Yeah.
This is essentially like week 2 for him in the NFL.
Well, and I think they run some different stuff. And this is a scheme that's much more aggressive than what this team has done in the past in terms of, the aggressive style where they're going to force the issue. And so I think if you can go out and do that and just force him to do what you want him to do, get the ball out quick and not allow him to go down the field to some of these guys, I think that's how you can have some success.
Let's go to Ryan and Warrington on Grant and Danny. What's your level of confidence the Commanders deliver the goods on Sunday Night Football?
I'm right there with Toby. I'm a 7 out of 10. And that's it's really solely because of the past and everything that us beaten down redheaded stepchildren have felt. But I also agree with Toby again that it's a rookie quarterback coming into our home on a poopy weather day. Sorry, the Harley's just went flying past me. But you let this, you try to let this guy beat us. We don't have much tape on Penix. Bijan's going to be a problem, but we saw what we did against Barkley last week. Once we focus on that one particular thing.
Well, they did an awesome job stopping him. Here's the problem, though. Because after the 109-yard first quarter, from the rest of the game, his last like 22 carries, he had 40-some yards. It was basically 2 yards a pop. They were great. But if they just catch the football a couple times, the Eagles still, I mean, you're talking about 40 points that they would have scored. And I know early on was half of it, but it's still 3 touchdowns. It's still enough to get over the hump. It's not like we should work back from that result and say, well, that plan was perfect because they won. They won largely because Saquon Barkley can't hold on to that ball when Wagner made a great play, or Devontae Smith drops a ball in the middle of the field, and also a couple of times where Kenny Pickett made a really bad decision. Kenny Pickett throws a terrible interception to Frankie Louvu. Is Penix going to do that? It's possible. It's his second game. But I'm not convinced of that. He's got a bigger arm than Kenny Pickett. You got to defend more of the grass because of that. 800-636-1067. I want to hear more thoughts on your level of confidence for the Commanders against the Falcons. And Toby, we got to get into playoff permutations. Because everyone's looking at this like Washington's trying to clinch the 7th seed. And that's definitely a thing. But they could still pretty easily get the 6th seed. It's still possible that they could win the division and have a home playoff game in Landover for what would be like the 4th time ever. I don't think it's going to happen, but it's possible. So we'll get into all of that next. Grant and Danny without Danny on the Fan.